Hey guys, Tempest here. Just a friendly Canadian reminder to keep forest spying, and you're watching Thorin's YouTube.
The problem is, like, this is almost like when you first join Heroic, you join Complexity, and then it's like, you never got a bloody chance. Like, it was just roster move, roster move, roster move. And then also, you had all those problems where it was like the fucking thing where, obviously, Configure Blame F left at one point and were never going to stay, and they would just wait for the contracts to run out. And then you had the whole injury situation with Poison. Like, this one really feels like you never got a chance on this, right?
No, like, when I joined Complexity, it just gave me flashbacks of Optic, you know? I joined Complexity, 1 week into the project, I just hear Blame F and Configure negotiating their contract with Astralis because they might join their rosters, join Astralis for the next year. And then I'm just like, well, like, what am I doing here? And then I thought, but, you know, when this happened, I found myself in an opportunity like, okay, this is a great team. You know, they're playing pretty good CS. I'm coaching a guy that I really respect. That could actually help me to, you know, throughout my career for my next gig or something like that. So why not give it a try, you know? And then since I was working with Blame F, I was pretty happy, and I just decided to, you know, whatever. Like, even if he's leaving after this and at the end of the year, let's just do our best and see how it goes. And then 2 weeks into the project, like, one week into the project, I found out they're negotiating. 2 weeks into the project, we go to a boot camp in Serbia, Config fractures his hand or whatever, and then he's out of the team. My star player, most important player in the team. And then we found ourselves in that weird situation where obviously Complexity doesn't want to spend a lot of money to find a substitute, since, like, what do you do? Like, is Config going to stay or not? I think Complexity kind of was hesitating and doubting the fact that Config would maybe leave. They actually wanted to maybe try to approach Config and get him to stay. So it wasn't easy for me to just go to the management, like to Jason Lake, and be like, hey, I heard Config is leaving. Like, can we just fire him and get someone else? You know, I don't blame him for waiting and stuff like that. So we had to get a standing. Complexity didn't want to spend money, that much money at least, on it. And there wasn't many options because of roster lock and people who already played majors and blah, blah, blah. So we ended up with CodeZera. And then, obviously, CodeZera trying to prove himself in the team, and people really, to be honest with you, like, it's not like the whole team was sold on the fact that we're getting CodeZera. Some people didn't really want him to be the replacement, but we had no better options, so they just dealt with it, pretty much. And then, we had an environment where it's like CodeZera trying to prove himself to be a part of the team, because he wanted to be a part of the team. And then, he also, because he heard, obviously, that maybe the team would collapse towards the end of the year with Blame F and Config leaving. So he found himself as an opportunity to maybe get Complexity to rebuild the roster around him, right? So he was really trying to prove himself. And then I don't think the management as well believed in CodeZera enough, which was a problem. Didn't give him enough respect, didn't care that much about him. Because they already had in the back of their minds that if Astralis would
they were going to get the players who went to Vitality instead, right?
Exactly. Yes. They already had something else as a backup plan. So it was a project that was so weird because there was no purpose. Like, the management didn't believe in it. Like, there was so much stuff going on, and then the whole thing with Poison as well. Like, Poison, again, super talented player. Another player, another good example of, like, the Phelps of the world, sick and, you know, very introspective guy. A guy that is, like, you know, has a very strong personality, so it's not easy to deal with. Like, he needs to be 100% in his comfortable zone to be able to deliver. And Poison had a lot of, like, it was everything at the same time. Poison had a lot of, like, family issues back in the days. I think his mom was sick or something like that. And then everything happening at the same time, and then Poison completely lost focus in the game, didn't want to compete. He also hears about, you know, Blame F and Config leaving. So that whole project was just like, whatever. People are just trying to finish up the year to see where it goes. And then there's me there trying to do my best and CodeZera trying to prove himself while the project is already dead. Yeah.
By the way, what were you going to type there? Do you need to go now?
No, I'm fine. I just want to get some water.
Yeah, just do like a 5-minute break and then we'll finish up. We've got like 15, 20 minutes left, yeah.
Back. All right, cool. Let's do it.
Right, after this complexity period, when you then got this chance to coach this Imperial squad, right, first thing I want to ask is just this, because some of this, to be fair, this is the problem with when squads are made. Some of the things that people hear are like the rumors of like, this player might join and they might like this team. And what fans won't know is that's always going on in Counter-Strike. Like as you described in the interview, there's always teams where like, you know, this guy's probably going to get kicked, but not right now, in like a month or two. And then another teammate's thinking like, I'd probably bring in this guy that I like to replace. That's always going on in the background anyway. But as a result, I feel like the theme that has dominated the Imperial squad is that whole last dance thing. Now, what people might not know is, they already, people like Fallen and I think maybe Zeus and a couple of other people in Brazil had already made mention before this squad was made, like, maybe we should have a last dance, because obviously, like, famously that documentary came out, the Michael Jordan stuff. But as far as I know, they actually really did mean, like, put together the original, like, lineup that won the majors, right? They meant the one with, like, FNX and Cold Zero, and the idea was everyone would come back and play with one squad. Now, obviously, that didn't happen, and as if people have followed the story in the interview so far that we're doing now, Cold Zero had other plans and didn't actually plan to do that anyway. And in the end, they didn't make the exact lineup. And obviously, people like Bolts weren't in the classic lineup. And obviously, it goes without saying, Vinny wasn't. He's like a guy from Fury, etc. Right? When you first joined this team, what was the premise that you were sold on? Was it that we were going to do like a last dance? And this is some sort of like, I mean, what was the project that was presented to you, basically?
Yeah, the project that was presented to me was one of the first guys that approached me was actually Cold Zero. Right, like when we worked together in Complexity, we got along really well. I think Cold actually gained a lot of respect for me after he actually saw me working and saw the way I approach things and stuff. And I think he was tremendously helpful in order to sell the idea of having me as a coach for the Last Dance project. You know, I think if there was anything, any doubts in Fallen's mind or some of those players' minds about like having me as a coach, I think Cold helped a lot. And I also coached Fear at some point as well, like in
the other iteration
of like the other Imperial thing, where I stayed for like a month just to help the guys. Like Fear was also there. Both of those guys, I think they helped a lot. But you know, it was the main idea of the project was to actually build the old roster, put everyone together. We, from what I heard, I think Fallen tried to talk with Taku to see if he would potentially be interested. But you know, they're doing pretty great in Godsend, and I think Taco felt really comfortable there as an IGL. The whole project itself, like, it didn't make sense for him to give up on the whole thing, you know, to be a part of the Last Dance thing, which I understood. But the original idea was definitely to bring all five players together, Taco, FNX, Cold, Fallen, and Fair. Taco wasn't possible. I think we called Zero. I know it has been slightly touched publicly, but, you know, Cold Zero was a part of the project towards, you know, pretty much the whole time. And because of like personal reasons, like the family issues and stuff like that, like Cold, I don't know if he has said this specifically publicly, but I guess I can touch on that. But you know, Cold had a issue with the having to live in Portugal for a certain period of time in order to get his residence card or something like that.
Right.
Okay. And for him to get that, he would require us to stay in Europe, or basically be permanent in Europe for a pretty large amount of time. And when we made the project, it's not like Cold presented this this situation right at the beginning, right? Like, we're talking about all the stuff, and then suddenly Cold comes and says, hey guys, I have this situation going. And I think the biggest thing was the way that Cold presented the situation was very hard for everyone else to chime in and support him and change the whole idea of the project midway through negotiations and everything. Because Cold was, I think it's fair to say that Cold probably didn't say it the best way possible. It was more like, hey guys, there's a situation going, we have to deal with it, like, because I'm Cold Zero and I want to be a part of this, so you guys have to deal with it. And then it wasn't like this, right? Like, obviously, like, we already had a lot of plans about the project and stuff. And once he presented that, we're all like, well, this is not aligned with what we have discussed before. And then suddenly we found ourselves in a situation where, well, we can't have Code Zero, right? Like, it's not connected to everything we talked about and everything we already decided. So we get rid of Code Zero, let him move on. And then we decide to bring Bolts And Vinny, right? Vinny was just a good opportunity that we found in the middle of the situation, right? Like he's getting kicked from Furia. He actually had other offers prior to this, but he just decided to, just like me. I think Vinny and me are pretty much aligned with the fact that, you know, we grew up watching those guys and all the thing about SK era and stuff like that. And then I, at least for myself, it was just like, well, who the hell knows if I'm going to have another opportunity to be the coach of these guys, to work with Fallen and stuff like that. It always been a dream for me to coach a Brazilian team and to be the coach of those guys. And I guess kind of the same goes for Vini, you know. He stayed a long period in Furia, and then he wanted to try something different. And why not give it a try with one of the most popular IGLs, one of the best IGLs, proven IGLs in the world, and to be a part of this project. But, you know, the whole project was not about, like, obviously we were not extremely worried about the competitive side of things. It was mainly more about the Last Dance thing and doing this for the Brazilian community and being together and try to bring a lot of content. Like, I can tell you, like, we had a lot of negotiations with other organizations prior to Imperial where we would be focused a lot more on content than just the competitive side of things. And, you know, like, and then we found ourselves joining Imperial, the organization, but back to, like, before that, we negotiated with so many organizations where we would do, like, you know, kind of like a Netflix series of, like, the Last Dance thing, filming everything, all the background, all the stuff. It would be really cool. But for sure, that would take a toll on us on the competitive side of things, which, because of the numbers we asked, because of different situations, like, you know, ended up not happening, and then we joined Imperial. And then, yeah, I think that the whole project was built way more focused on not on the competitive side, let's put it like that.
Right. Wait, wait there one second. Right, one question I have to ask about this, the Last Dance lineup, and it's going to be an awkward one, Peacemaker, because, spoiler, everyone in Brazil loves this guy. He is one of the legends of the scene, and it's obviously going to be about FNX. Because another reason I have to say I was massively skeptical of the initial lineup, this is where I know people already, mate. I know how history works. They're going to delete in their minds that there ever were these different lineups, and they're going to act like the last lineup with Cello, who actually looked like a pretty good player of that team. They're going to act like that was the lineup all along, and it always was like competitive. Whereas the first lineup, one of the problems was FNX was coming back into the active lineup because obviously he was one of the Last Dance players years back, and we all know the meme that no FNX, no major, and all that jazz, which everyone was clearly an angle people wanted to play into for fun, especially because there was a Brazilian major coming up. But the problem is he hadn't played in a long, long time, Peacemaker. We're talking like years. And even though I know along the years there was like a couple of times where he was on teams, like he was on like Red Canids briefly and stuff, he was on some teams where like he came back to like professional player, but it was more like semi-pro player. It was mainly in Brazil, obviously, right? I've heard behind the scenes he's not even someone actually who was putting in much time on CS. Like, I've always said the reason I know he must have like either just lost interest or passion in Counter-Strike is because if you've ever seen him on his Instagram, he clearly does a lot of like physical fitness, so he clearly is a very disciplined guy if he wants to be. Like, he has, like, for real, like the washboard abs that, like, you have to do like insane work to get to that level of body fat percentage. So the question I have is this, right? It's not about like a diss on FNS. I think anyone who comes back after like 3 or 4 years of not being a pro, like, think of the people at the beginning of CSGO. If I brought one of those like old Swedish players back, I doubt they'd be good now, mate. Like, they wouldn't be good enough to like win a major, certainly. So what was the perception when you had FNX in the lineup in this sense? Like, was it a concern? Like, how was he going to manage to play at the top level? What did you think when they were making this lineup? Because that was the one I had the question mark over.
Yeah, I also had a question mark on FNX. I think that it's pretty fair to say when they told me about the project and about the fact of maybe getting FNX back, I raised a couple questions, you know, to Fallen and the people in the project back in the days about, you know, how committed he would be towards the project. Because, like, there's always this joke, at least, like, in the Brazilian scene, that, you know, you can probably get FNX to be, like, really focused for a short, for some period of time until he has some other stuff to do in real life, or, like, right. I don't know, being participating in, like, a TV series or whatever it
sure.
is. Like,
yeah.
He gets to a point where, like, he has too much to do outside of CS that he loses focus completely, and he, and then that's where, you know, that's what the joke is about. Like, how long can FNX stay focused on the team? And when we started discussing about getting him, I personally had a couple of talks with him, and I know some of the boys also did. And I think Fallen played a important part in that sense, because I think he spoke with FNX a lot, and FNX really wanted to try and prove himself again. And try to, you know, he said it multiple times that he wanted to put up the hours and at least try. The biggest thing for me was that I don't think, I even told this to FNX, right? I think that, as you said, the fact that he stayed out of CS, not competing and not playing for a pretty long time, I don't think he knew back then how hard it would be for him to get back into the scene. Like, I think, you know, even back from back in the days when he joined Luminous in SK, and he, you know, he always stayed a period without competing or like not being relevant, like playing internationally and stuff like that. But he always came back, but it wasn't like 3 or 4 years without playing, right? So when he came back, I think the biggest thing that we tried to do was to obviously try to make him as comfortable as possible, try to make him understand that, you know, he would need some time. We said it, we had multiple talks about, you know, because when he came back, luckily we were competing in Brazil, qualifying through, you know, Brazilian qualifiers and stuff. So he had an easier time back then to slowly try to learn about the game again and adapt and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, once we started to compete internationally, and then we started to boot camp, and we started to practice against European teams, and then we started to play qualifiers and tournaments in Europe, that's where it started to get rough, you know, for him. And I don't think, at least in this Imperial project, I don't think we had a big challenge in terms of, like, managing his personality, you know, him not being focused and stuff. I think, yes, he could have put a bit more time into the game. I just don't think that, you know, there's also this joke in Brazil about, you know, FNX missing grenades, for example. It has been a problem forever. I feel like I've watched a lot of LG demos and SK demos from back in the days, and the guy was always missing utility, always, you know, he's not really dedicated in that sense, but he does play an important card in the team, you know, because he's a very nice guy to be around with, like, very funny, like, he brings a good mood into the team. And, you know, just the fact, I think they even said it after I left the coach and they got him as a coach, which I guess we're going to get there. But, you know, they basically said how important it was just to have FNX around because of how he is as a person. And there's also this thing, like, FNX is just really nice to work with outside of CS. And when he gets to CS, he does have a little bit of, like, you know, bad, I guess we could put it like bad habits and stuff that he, you know, he learned through his career. So, like, when you try to approach a couple topics with him, a couple things that he needs to change in order to get better and stuff, it is a little bit challenging. It was a little bit challenging for me as a coach and for some of the players as well. But it's just, you know, it's just FNX. Like, he has his own, like, ways of thinking about the game. He likes to have freedom to do his things. And if you try to, like, control him way too much, then it gets even worse, because then he gets frustrated, then he doesn't want to play anymore. So it was challenging in that sense to, you know, find a balance between letting him feel comfortable and have the freedom that he likes, but at the same time trying to make him understand how much time he had to put into the game to maybe get back into, you know, back to have a good form and to compete internationally and stuff like that. That was challenging, and I think we did a decent job. But yeah, I mean, I have to agree with some of the criticism out there that, at least in my eyes, I think FNX could have put a bit more time into the game. And yeah, and naturally, I expected him to struggle. And I don't think he was, to be fair, I don't think he was giving enough time to possibly get better and stuff like that. It was, what, like 6-7 months in the roster, and like I would say like 3 or 4 months maximum of like competing internationally against the best teams in the world. So for a guy who stayed 3-4 years without playing, competing and stuff like that, that's just not enough. Like, even though he's super talented, and there's also this joke about, you know, FNX being super talented, and he really is. Like, when we started watching him, when we started, you know, when I started coaching him, I could tell the guy has something else. Like, he's different. He really feels the game, like, and he is talented. He's really talented. But, you know, nowadays, at least, I think you need more than talent to be able to compete against some of the best teams. Yeah.
Another player that I want you to try and explain to me from this team has got to be Fur, who I actually think has probably been the best player in this team so far. Like, he's the player where, like, maybe you could say this about Cello the last few months or something, he looked pretty good. But aside from that, like, Fur, for real, I actually think could just be the best. Like, if Fury is the best presenter, he could be in Fury, in my opinion. Like, he actually looks for real. Like, he's just, like, this guy just has some, like, insane talent for Counter-Strike. Because, again, I doubt he's putting in the most hours out of anyone. He, even on the team, looks like the one who just sort of chills the most. Doesn't seem as bothered by some of the other stuff. So the question I have is this, right? People might know that, as mad as this sounds, back in, like, I think it was in 2019, mate, when we were at this event in China, one of the Star Series events, he did like a troll tweet where he pretended to retire. Do you remember this? He just did a tweet where it's just, yeah. He basically just said, like, straight up, like, I retire or something, like, in the tweet. And I thought it was real. Like, I thought, holy shit, because at the time, the same thing. The rumor was, like, maybe he's the guy who doesn't put in as much hours outside the game. Maybe he's the guy who only wants to compete in this one team. And if the team's not good, maybe he's lost interest. So what I would ask is this: one, can you explain a bit about who he is? But then two, the other thing is, it's implied to me, if I look at his career, like, even though, like I say, maybe I would put him, like, Football Manager style into the top team and have him compete for it. It sounds like maybe he doesn't want to do that aspect of his career anymore. He's not just want to be in any one team. He wants to be in this specific team, or he wants to play with Fallen specifically, or with that same group of players. Is there a reason why he doesn't just go sort of freelance? Like, he could be in a phase class, in my opinion. What do you think?
I think for Fear, at least when I, you know, I coached him a little bit in the Imperial project before this one, you know, it was like a Brazilian roster and stuff. When I met him and started, like, to actually, you know, see the way he plays and the way he thinks about CS and stuff. Because prior to this, like, we had talks and stuff like that, but I didn't know how Fear was as a player. But when I met him, it was a little bit weird because, like, he wanted to play in certain roles. And the way he thought about CS just in general, after the SK period and Luminosity and stuff, like, he wanted to lurk in some maps and be like, okay, play like outer positions and stuff like that. And one of the first things that I remember telling him was, like, you know, that's a little bit weird because, like, for me, I always saw Pharaoh as a very aggressive player, a guy that needs freedom, a guy that makes impact and needs freedom to do the stuff that he used to do, you know. Probably one of the best players on Overpass back in the days, like, together with Rain, right? Like, pretty much created the meta that we still see a little bit nowadays with Gretchen and, and stuff like that. So when I started to talk to him and see the way he thought about CS was a little bit weird, and apparently, like, that's the way he wanted to play. He wanted to lurk in some maps, and it was weird because as T, he wanted to lurk, and then as CT, he does have, like, probably, like, the best roles in the game. So, like, roles like, you know, connector on Overpass, and then A on Overpass as well. So roles that actually needed to be super active and making plays and stuff like that. And when, at least in my eyes, when you put yourself in a position as T where you're lurking and you're not really active, like, for me, there is a conflict, you know, because let's say you start a match on T side and you start lurking and stuff like that, and then you have a rough game. Then suddenly you have to play CT and have to be very active. You have to be confident to make plays and stuff like that. So that was one of the conversations I had with him that was a little bit weird about the fact that he wanted to play like that. And I think part of the reason why that happened is because towards the end of, like, MIBR and SK and those rosters, I think they tried switching him around role-wise. And I think for some reason he started to like it. Like, I don't really know. Like, I just remember him telling me that, like, but in this team, I was playing, like, for example, Dust 2. He wasn't taking map control. He was, like, holding long. And, like, yeah, he was doing a couple plays, taking one-on-ones and stuff, but that's it. And I was like, Fair, I think you should be taking map control. That's where naturally you're really good at. You're really skilled. Like, for me, it doesn't make much sense, but he wanted to play that way. And with Fair, it's always like this, you know, like, I think Fair is a guy that for him to perform, he needs to feel comfortable, for sure, 100% comfortable in the game, gets the things that he wants to do. It's not like he's super, like, stricted about, like, if I'm not going to play my way, then I don't want to play. It's not like that. But it's more like, I think he loses a little bit of motivation, you know? So I think partly one of the reasons why Fear dropped a little bit or didn't play for international teams and stuff like that, I think it's also because, first, he always played with Brazilians. And for some reason, he always felt comfortable playing with Fallen and stuff like that. And I agree with you, like, I don't see Fair competing for any international rosters purely because of the fact that he likes to be around Fallen. When we started the project, for example, he even played for, I think, 00 Nation with KNG and some of the other guys. And without getting into too much details, like, I could tell that he wasn't happy at all. That's mainly it. Like, even though You know, he was playing good, he had all he wanted, but he just, doesn't feel normal for him, doesn't feel natural. So he always wanted to play with his friends. And I think that's plays a huge part on his career in general. Like, he doesn't, for him, it's not about trying to be the best player in the world or trying to compete or trying to, like, earn as much money as possible. It really is about being happy, playing with people he likes, being around people that he loves. And that's mainly it. It has been like this ever since I met him, even before I coached him, talking to him and stuff. And yeah, the guy literally doesn't care, like, about probably being one of the best players. Like, and to some extent, I cannot say that he doesn't put up, like, the work for it, because he does put a lot of hours, you know. Like, I, for example, every time we are boot camping and stuff, he was always one of the guys being there for a long time, watching a lot of games. He watches a lot of Counter-Strike, way more than I actually believed he did, because there's also this joke about Fear not, you know, preparing enough for games. Like, and then he even gave interviews already saying, like, ah, I don't like to prepare too much, I like to play my own game. And even for me, it was challenging. It would be challenging if I didn't have the experience I have nowadays. But with a player like Fear, I totally get him, because, like, he plays in positions and he likes to play in a certain way that if I feel him too much information, and if he gets way too much information about the opponents for, and stuff like that, I think that would massively impact his game. So I totally understood why that joke was around, and it's actually true that he doesn't like to know too much about the opponents. He would rather play his own game. But then again, it conflicts with the... some of his own thoughts about the game, about, you know, role-wise and what he wants to do and stuff like that. Still, performance-wise, yeah, I mean, he was probably one of the best players in the Imperial roster when I was coaching. Really talented, has a lot of potential. It's just not his thing. Answering your question very straightforward, it's not his thing trying to be the best player in the world and compete for, like, join FaZe Clan and stuff and be around people that he doesn't really, you know. Like, that's just not his thing. And on top of that, I think he's been having a couple problems, you know, real life issues with his family and stuff. So for him nowadays, it just makes more sense to chill, play a little less, be around Brazil a lot more together with his friends and stuff. I think that the focus for him changed a little bit over time. Now more than ever, like, he would definitely not put up the, like, you know, the work of, like, moving to a different country to compete just for the sake of trying to be the best player. Like, we're not going to see that from Pierre. Yeah.
Right. We'll talk about the ASIC stuff in a minute, but I just wanted to ask this question. So obviously you had to miss the Antwerp Major because of all the ASIC stuff and, like, the ban and all that stuff. And so, but people will know you already weren't the coach by the time the last major arrived, but you did coach the tournaments between them, like Cologne and the Pinnacle Championship and all that jazz. So my question is this, before we go to the ASIC stuff, was the ASIC stuff and not being able to coach at the majors related to why you are no longer with Imperial, or did Imperial, separate to that, just decide they didn't want you as a coach anymore? Which way around is it?
I mean, the thing with ASIC and stuff, and the reason why I wasn't with them coaching and stuff, I think that took a huge part on why they didn't want me around. You know, basically, after the rumors came out and all that kind of stuff happened, I think the team, the project, just decided to have me try to figure out whatever happened, whatever's going to happen with ASIC and stuff like that before I came back into the team. And yes, answering your question very straightforward, I think whatever happened with ASIC, all that stuff that, you know, raised a lot of questions about me as a person and if I was bugged or not, if I was cheating or not and stuff like that, I think that raised a lot of questions in their minds as well. Then I just wanted to know, I could tell the main focus from the project was to have fun and to be together and stuff like that and not deal with drama. And when, as soon as that happened, I could feel that, you know, I was left on the side pretty much, and I understood it. They just didn't want to deal with any sort of drama. They just wanted me to figure out by myself, and yeah, that's mainly it.
Right, let's get into that ASIC stuff then. So I'll set the story up like this. If people don't know, over the years when they came out, it was basically from 2020 on, people will know, like around autumn of 2020, funnily enough, when the qualification for the last attempt at the Rio Major was, if people remember the timeline a few years back. What happened was ASIC, through the guy who used to work as an admin for ESL, came out with this. They discovered there was a coaching bug where basically coaches could, like, essentially not, instead of just being a guy watching all the POVs, they could be in like a third person position, or depending, there was all a bunch of different bugs, but mainly it was that, like, either they were stuck in a position, it was like a, famously the joke was it was like a cipher cam from Valorant, if people know, where you could sort of see what was going on, or sometimes they could even actually move around as well. And what happened was there was the first wave which caught loads of people, and some people even got banned who weren't even famous coaches, like obviously like Dead did it for like one round or something on a pistol round or something. There was a bunch of different people got like different incidents, right? And then over the years, there's been a couple more waves where there was a different slight variation of the bug, and then that more people would get banned and more people. But the key thing to explain at the beginning, when I, before I ask you this question, is one, a Valve ban is separate from the ESIC ban. The ESIC bans are shorter, and they tend to actually be more in line with what most people think. Like, for example, if someone did it like at one instance, they get like a few months, that's it. The Valve bans are different. They did this weird system where each like incident like took like a major off you or something. And so there's really weird ones where, like, famously Gary can't do it for like two more majors or something, and will have missed like five. And then probably the maddest one is, I think Raging is just like banned forever or something insane like that. Like, you can just like, even if there's like 50 majors, I guess you could never play again or something, like something outrageous like that. So basically those are two separate issues. We're talking about the ESIC one here, the shorter ones. Like, no one, the problem is none of us can contact Valve. Like, I never do interviews with Valve, no one knows what they do or how they decide it. So we're talking mainly about the ESIC one now, right? So the ESIC one in your case was one of the most recent waves of like a different version of the bug. And in theory, right, this is what I want to get to. So first of all, there's two parts to the opening question. One is, one of the problems you faced is you yourself, when the first wave came out a couple of years ago, were actually one of the vocal coaches who sort of was like, yeah, like, shame on these cheaters, but like, don't worry, you'll never see me involved with one of those bugs. Basically, you basically just opened
it. Yeah.
It was very rare that anyone said that, because normally you would think, yeah, like a lot of people, like, what if I am? Like, so most people, that actually made it seem like you were super against it. And then the other thing, obviously, is you were only, your thing only came to light, I mean, it was actually this year. It was early this year when I heard the same story. It was you. People might know this instance. I know this hasn't been made as explicit. Zonic was one of them. There was like you, Zonic, and there was like a third person. I forget who was. It was, I think, I can't remember who it was anyway, but it was another, maybe like a CIS coach or something. So basically, yeah, give us the initial thing there. One, why did you say that thing years ago? And then two, how is this bug to you different from the other one?
Well, answering your first question, I mean, I said it because I meant it. Like, when I first heard about the first cases, was absurd to me, and I knew that, like, being a coach that has been around for a long time, when, for example, Valve changed the coaching rule back in the days, and I had been very vocal as well, multiple times with Valve. I tried contacting them through email. I tried to message them on the Twitter page. I tried, you know, to voice my opinion multiple times publicly that, you know, I think they were just too drastic in the way they communicate with the community, with us coaches, with the pro scene and stuff like that has been terrible. So I always gave feedback whenever I didn't think that it was the right compromise, and I always did it in a way that it wasn't like just heavy criticizing Valve. Basically, I always try to share my opinion of what could be a better solution or give a better compromise to the situations, and that's just an example. And then when the bans came from ESIC and Valve and all that kind of stuff, again, one of those situations that it's just terrible, right? Like, there was multiple cases, like absurd cases of people actually cheating. I mean, Honden is a good example, and there's also the CIS coach from Akuma or something like that. That was
Hard Legion, like, was the famous one.
Yeah, exactly. And then when I see those cases, I knew that that was a massive turning point that, again, it would hurt not only me as a coach, but the community in general. I knew that it would affect a lot of the teams. Things would change the way they would see coaches. Like, and there's always this thing, has always been the scene of this thing that Valve doesn't really like coaches. And then some people go and cheat and do that kind of stuff. That you just give them like fuel to basically be like, oh, we're right. And now coaches have even less power than they actually had back in the days. So when that happened, that got me really concerned about my job, my career, and some of my friends as my colleagues as well. So that's why I was vocal. And when that happened, being completely honest with you, I didn't even think for a second, when I tweeted that, I didn't even think for a second like, well, did it happen to me at any time or stuff like that? Like, it didn't even cross to my mind. And then after I tweeted, some people contacted me and said, hey, Louis, like, that's a nice tweet and stuff like that. Nice that you're voicing your opinion, but are you 100% sure that you're not one of the cases, like, you're not going to be banned in the future and stuff like that? And then I was, obviously, like, that got me, like, yeah, I mean, I don't remember it. Like, I definitely don't remember, like, cheating an entire game and giving info and that kind of stuff. So, like, my conscience was like, well, I'm fine. Like, I don't remember anything at all. Then I tried to see some of the games. I tried, but I didn't know. I didn't have the tools, and I didn't know how to, you know, basically see if I was bugged, whether or not. Like, I only realized that after the rumors came out, after my situation happened. That's when I actually contacted Michal, the admin, and he explained to me how to see, how to trigger to see if I was bugged or not. So back in the days, I was just like, well, whatever. And then, yeah, what was your second question again?
And then basically, like, when this wave came along, like, give us some thoughts. Like, how was this version of the bug to you significantly different to the one that Hunter and the rest used?
Yes, I think it is different, but I think the biggest thing for me is has to always be like the intention. And at least in my case and some of the other cases that I saw, right? I think there is a massive difference for me, at least, if you trigger the bug and if you actively use it and you share information, clearly you're sharing information. And especially for me, if you, for example, even if you don't if you trigger the bug, that's terrible, right? Like, if people trigger the bug, like,
as in intentionally, like, you did it on purpose.
Intentionally, yeah, did it on purpose for me, like, there's no excuse. Then if you find yourself in a bug, and which was a lot of the cases, even, you know, some, I even heard about Zonic and some of the other coaches that still hasn't come out. If you find yourself in a bug, and you, for me at least, if you find yourself in a bug, at first place you don't know how to react and whatever, which was my case at least, and then you try to actually disconnect and you try to do stuff like that, for me that's enough for me to see that, well, the guy didn't want to be bugging, didn't want to be cheating, he disconnected immediately or reacted in a way that clearly you can see he's not comfortable. Which wasn't my case. I'm going to get there. Like, I know the mistakes I did, you know. So with those cases, then I think it's a lot different. It doesn't matter for me if it's a third-person bug, free room, which was my case, or whatever. Like, I think it all comes down to, like, if the guy actually wanted to cheat or not. And so, yeah, answering your question, I think it is different to some extent. For me, at least, it has to be more about the intention if the guy actually shared the information or not.
Yes. I mean, I will say this is one area where actually I probably did go too hard at you on Twitter on that. Because the problem is this, right? It's the concept of if we establish there are rules and we all agree, like, we're all going to follow these rules. That's what I was mad about, is that we've established these rules and we have punished loads of other people that did, did less than you did. Like, as you say, some people like Rob and Gary, they just had a bug get triggered on them. And in that case, some of them did nothing, literally walked with the PC, didn't move it. Like, but they all got punished. They all got, like, Rob and couldn't, I mean, this is a Valve one again. Rob and couldn't stand there when his team won the major. Gary can't go to any fucking majors. Like, you know, like, I know ESIC bans different, but the point is they got punished for it, right? So my problem is that we accepted that these rules are legit, because if not, you're actually making an interesting point, which is, funny enough, what people originally said about the whole thing with the players as well. As like, obviously it matters if players knew about it or if the person just never said anything, that's different. Because the problem I have basically with this whole topic is, basically, in your particular case, those other people who got punished who did nothing, you did actually, like, move around, etc. So the issue is, we've established the precedent in Counter-Strike. Now, the point is you're opening this up to a debate. Like, maybe this shouldn't be the precedent. The precedent before was if the bug happened, I know this might sound mad because a lot of fans don't know this, how extreme the rule is. The rule basically is, it's not if you did anything. It's not if you communicate anything. It's not even if you move the mouse. It's if you don't immediately, like, disconnect or tell the admin. That if you don't do that, basically, under the ESIC system, you have already violated, like, the rules and you will be punished. Like, even if that's one round, as is the case with certain people I've referenced earlier, whether that's like a bunch of rounds, you did nothing and there's not even any proof. You could even have been staring at a wall the whole time. It doesn't matter. The ruling is essentially almost the same. It's the number of instances. Now, in your case, you're making an interesting point, which is if the bug happened, true, you didn't get out of it, you didn't tell an admin, maybe you were stuck in it. Like, this is an old school example. People didn't know how these bugs worked, how the interactions worked. But at the same time, your argument is, as long as you don't talk to the players, though, you didn't cheat. Like, you might have had some more information, but... Right. So essentially, this is the question I would have, though, is does that mean then that in your opinion, based on how your cases run, we should actually reopen a whole bunch of these cases? Maybe we should push back where the precedent is. Maybe it should be more lenient in that sense. Should more people have not been punished, do you think?
100%. Like, in my opinion, it should have been even before my cases. Some of the way, I mean, just in general, the way the cases were handled for me is just not fair enough to some of those. some of those coaches, Ruga, for example, Robban, Gary, Apoka, some others, right? It does give me like a bitter taste just to think that about the fact that I got, like, being completely honest, the fact that I got unbanned after a month, yes, I missed the major and stuff like that, but just the fact that my case looks a lot worse than Gary and Apoka and Robin and stuff like that, and just the fact that I managed to get myself unbanned, and those guys stayed for a long time without competing, and even up until today, being banned and stuff like that, it's just terrible. Like, I don't get it at all. I don't feel happy at all and proud about it at all, just even though I got unbanned. I think, yes, some of those cases should have been reviewed and should be reviewed. And it's just like my opinion on the way ESIC handled this has been very bad from the very beginning. And it does raise me a couple questions about, you know, I heard. So here's the thing. When my situation came out, right, this is the way I see it. Like, for me, it's already wrong. The fact that I hear about my case, and basically I heard it through a journalist who basically had somehow access to the video, shared it before ESIC, and then there creates a huge drama in my life because I was boot camping with the Imperial guys prior to the major. Then the news come out, and then that raises me the first question, like, how is this journalist or this website has somehow access to a private material that he shouldn't have, and then he releases it before ESIC. So that, for me, already raises a question. Like, there has to be someone working for ESIC who somehow shared this material to someone who shared. Like, I don't care about the way it happened, but that itself is already wrong. That they happened this way. The second thing is,
as far as I know, as well, by the way, that's been the case the whole way through this ESIC coaching bug thing. Like, I myself, and I'm not even trying to do it, just do like my source network. I always get info like a month or two before the people get banned. Like, there's, I even knew there's only one before the major. Like, this one's coming up. This one's coming up.
Exactly.
Like, it just permeates through the scene. Yeah, you're right. It leaks out.
That it leaks out, and it shouldn't be this way. If they wanted to be treated with respect and, you know, as a respectable organization who's dealing with it the best way they could and stuff like that, it definitely shouldn't be this way. So that's the first thing that I don't like it. Then just in general, like, from the very beginning, just the fact that they don't talk, like, they didn't even give people a way of, like, trying to defend themselves. For them, it didn't really matter. As you said, like, it was just like, if you find yourself bugging, you didn't disconnect, whatever. Like, you're going to get banned for whatever certain period of time, depends on the case by case and how bad it looks and all that kind of stuff. That is wrong as well. And at least particularly about my case, I think I even told you this privately, but I would actually like to share this with the public, right? Like, when this happened with me, it was in an ECS game, facing match back in the days, like 3-4 years ago, right? And when this happened, clearly, I didn't know about it. When this happened to me, I was definitely like not reacting properly. I didn't disconnect. That was the biggest mistake, and one that I would accept a punishment for, just the fact that I didn't disconnect, I didn't react properly, even though I do show a little bit, like, I try to disconnect, I come back, I'm trying to fix it, but I cannot prove it completely because there's no communications recorded and stuff like that, but I'm trying to disconnect and trying to fix it. But you know, the thing for me, the biggest thing for me is just the fact that I heard it. After my case went public, I talked to multiple people in the scene. You, Richard Lewis, a lot of like Anders Moses, you know, players. I tried to ask them their opinions about my case, how they see it, how they feel the whole ESIC thing. And then I started to think about, like, you know, after I started to talk to some of these players, some of these people, I know for a fact, I'm not going to put any names out there, but I know for a fact that at the same time my bug was happening, some other coaches actually found themselves in a bug, communicated that to FACEIT and to ECS or whatever tournament organizer was, and basically they had, if they had a response back in the days, people were using Skype to do vetoes and stuff like that. So some of those logs are lost, and some of them even have the logs. Which raises me the question of why the second wave didn't happen yet. Because I think, like, there is a massive, like, problem with the ESIC. I think they found themselves doing something wrong or something like that. Because I know for a fact that some of the coaches actually communicated. And that puts me in a position to think, like, if this was happening and an admin was aware, FACEIT was aware, ECS was aware, why they didn't communicate publicly, like, hey, the situation happened with the coach X at this time. Look at the video. and basically try to educate people. Like, you see what's happening here. If you find yourself in a position like this, then you have to disconnect. Like, if I was educated back then, even though there was no need for that, as you said, the rule was pretty clear, but I didn't know about it. Like, I'm not the one reading the rule books and stuff like that. People send like a 50 pages rule book with a bunch of stuff. Like, unfortunately, I'm not the one reading all those massive rule books. But I was aware from the very beginning that, yes, I cannot break the integrity of the game. But if back in the days, people were more communicating that more, they made it clear, like, hey, this is happening and stuff like that, then I'm sure my case and some of the other cases would never actually happen. Because as soon as that happened, I would be like, oh, there's actually this tweet from Faceit, like, I have to disconnect. Boom, I would disconnect. And that raises me the question, like, why Faceit has never addressed it, ECS, or whatever admin it was. Like, why this has never been made more, why this has never got the attention it should have way back in the days, that I don't understand as well. And still up until today, I don't see anyone from Faceit or ECS or any admins coming forward to say, like, whatever happened. So there's a bunch of points that are not connecting for me still up until today. And talking specifically about my case, I think it's pretty clear that, as I already said, like, I think my biggest mistake was not disconnecting immediately. I did not share any information with my team. I was able to prove that towards ISIC, collected enough evidence to, you know, basically tell them, like, even from the opponents who were playing against me, they basically all testified in my favor, saying, like, you know, it's not a big deal. Like, I mean, in my case particularly, it was an eco round at the beginning of the game. Like, and that it wouldn't make sense for me to cheat and try to gain advantage in that specific moment in the game. Like, I wouldn't put my career, my integrity, just because of one eco round in an online game that really didn't really matter that much. Like, it doesn't make sense, you know, compared to some of the other cases out there who are, like, blatant, right? Like, the Akuma coach, for example, like all those massive cases, like Hunden, for example, and then during the my situation with ISIC, like, and then the fact that ISIC wanted to ban me for 2 years, that's also, like, was also absurd to me. Like, I got this letter from ISIC 3 or 4 days before the major, basically telling me that they wanted to ban me for 2 years. Again, like, for me, it doesn't make sense. Like, how are they going to judge me and treat me as one of the worst cases they ever had because of that one round? And then I was trying to compare myself with some of the other cases. Like, for me, just the way they handle all the cases and the way they apply these punishments, the length of the punishments and stuff, like, it never really did make much sense. And now I just want to say this to you as well. Like, then I'm sharing a lot of problems, right? A lot of, like, situations where, you know, I'm basically criticizing ISIC for the way they behave. And then you're probably going to ask me, like, yeah, then what have you done to try and change it? And I actually, before I even got banned, I offered myself to ISIC to be more, you know, I don't know, to try to help them some way, because I am experienced as a coach. They should actually get some more people from the scene with experience to actually help them judging these cases in a more fair way towards everybody, even offered them to maybe review some of the older cases. And basically what I get back is just zero communication. Like, it just feels like I'm talking to Valve. Like, they don't, even though I offered help, and I know some other people from back in the from the scene also offered them help. One of them is Enders. Like, I know Enders for a fact has tried to talk to them multiple times, tried to offer himself to be one of the main guys, like, helping them to judge these cases. And from my understanding, like, it doesn't feel like they even want the help. So, I mean, yeah, it's just terrible the way that they handle all of this, and even more the fact that apparently they don't need it, or they don't want help from the community to judge some of the cases.
Right, let's end on a more interesting note. So obviously, in light of what's happened, you are no longer banned by ISIC, and also you're available, right? So is the plan now, you want to be a coach again? You want to be a coach of a top team?
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me nowadays is that after the Imperial Project, I basically found myself in this Imperial Project in a situation that, like, I'm not really comfortable with. And I'm going to say this because, to be fair, when I started coaching Imperial, I knew from the very beginning that, you know, this wasn't a project where I would have a lot of space, purely based on the fact that I know how Fallen works, how Fallen likes to control his teams, and how some of those players think about coaches and the way they wanted to approach this project. So, as I said before as well in this interview, like, for us at the very beginning, it wasn't about the competitive side of things. But the focus did change during the project, during the time in the project. People wanted to focus way too much on the competitive side, and I didn't switch my own focus on that because I believe that we're doing this for the fans, we're doing this for fun, to be together and stuff like that. So the focus shift. And basically when that happened in this team, that put me in a position where I wasn't from the very beginning trying to be an active coach, trying to be respected, trying to get share my thoughts about the game, trying to get things a little bit the way I wanted. I was very open to pretty much all the stuff that they wanted me to do. Some of even my own thoughts and the ways I saw about the game, I was even giving up and letting them feel comfortable over my comfortable zone just to make sure that, you know, we have a good atmosphere and that kind of stuff. And, you know, towards the end of this project, I got pretty much blamed on, kicked from the team prior to the major, something that we agreed we would compete. Like, that left me in a very bad spot. Like, I felt really frustrated because that wasn't the intention with the project at all. I even told them this, that for me, the biggest thing for me after leaving this project was just the fact that we had a deal. You know, we're all adults. We know what we're doing. I had a pretty safe spot in Complexity before joining this project, even though they would go over a rebuild phase and stuff like that. But I could possibly have stayed in Complexity to rebuild the team and stuff like that. But I decided to join them and believe that we would be together. We would stick together until the major. And that didn't happen. So that left me in a very, very bad spot. And answering your question, if I am to coach a team nowadays, it would have to be something that, you know, it's not about me having full control over the roster, making all the decisions, deciding how the team is going to play and all kind of stuff, because I do believe that it's not the way coaches should work nowadays. I do think that I do need enough respect and enough time in order to get, you know, the results I want and in order to get the team functioning. And I think my career speaks for itself. Like, every time I had a coaching gig where I actually stayed for a long period of time, I can give examples like Mad Lions, where, you know, I pretty much got the team from the very beginning. Like, they were tricked before. They were struggling to compete in the Tier 1 scene. I joined the team. I have enough time, do a couple rebuild pieces, change a little bit of roles, have enough time to work. Boom, we start doing great. We win Flashpoint. We start competing Tier 1 events and all that kind of stuff. Heroic, again, an organization where I was part in two different iterations. I stayed in that organization for 3 years or something, and I had enough time and enough respect from the organization, for the management, in order to show my work and to have enough time to work with the roster. Again, another roster where we go from the very beginning, do a couple rebuild pieces, we do great again. So for me, it would have to be something that I have enough respect and enough, you know, support from the organization and from the players, and enough time to put work, because that has been the biggest challenge for me in my career as well, when I basically join a team and I just don't have enough time, or people are making decisions over me in the roster as a coach, like the amount of events we do and some of, like, all the stuff that should be my responsibility. For some reason, I don't have that. I don't have the respect, or I don't have the power to do those decisions. And then obviously things sometimes doesn't go great. And who leaves the team? Me as a coach. Like, then somehow the responsibility is mine. So I don't want to put myself in a situation like this anymore, like where I don't have the support from the organization and to make some of those decisions. So for me to coach a team nowadays, it would have to be something like that. And together with that, I would like to work with younger players as well. Like, a mixture between experienced players and younger players would make most sense for me. Also because, again, that's where I was, at least in my eyes, where I was more successful. With Heroic, with Mad Lions, again, dealing with inexperienced players, younger players who had to develop, together with a bit of, like, experienced players. Those are the best projects for me in my career, and the ones where I was actually allowed to do my best as a coach to help some of these players to develop on an individual level as well. That's what I want moving forward. And if not, then I would probably try to do something like on the talent side of things. I really enjoyed being at the major, having my first gig as a talent and analyst and stuff like that. I would be open to that as well. As long as I'm involved in CS, basically, that's my passion and that's what I want to do. So we'll see. From now, I've been talking to a couple organizations and stuff, but, you know, I've been around way too much. There's even this joke about me joining multiple teams and stuff like that. I don't want to keep joining teams. It has to be something that makes sense, yeah.
At the end of this interview, do you have a final message, or is there anyone you want to thank or say hello to?
No, I just want to thank you for the opportunity, Tori. Again, like, you're one of the guys that, you know, from the very beginning, you were criticizing me a few times with a reasoning behind it, and I respect you a lot for the work you do. And I don't think you were aware about how much you and people like Richard and, you know, some other people that actually gave me advices. When I say criticize, like, it's not really fair to you, because you also gave me a lot of advices and stuff that I should change. So I want to thank you for this opportunity to be here with you and for everything that you, not only you do for the scene, and I respect your work a lot, and you also helped me a lot in my career to realize some of the things that I should change. And yeah, basically thank my Brazilian fans, people that actually supported me a lot. Especially when I left Imperial, I was in a pretty dark spot, very unhappy with the way things were handled. But I got a lot of support from the community, still up until today. I got a lot of support. So yeah, thank you to Brazilian fans, to the community in general, and hopefully you guys will see more from me in the future. Yeah.
Muito obrigado.
Obrigado, Tony.
Money doesn't grow on trees, and believe it or not, just watching a video for free with your dad doesn't really pay the bills. So thanks to the following people for kindly supporting my work and this particular content. And those people are, of course, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Butt Pounder 420, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion, my main man. You know what? There are plenty of perks to be found on my Patreon, like you can find out who upcoming guests are for my reflections, interviews and talk shows. You can ask me a question in my monthly AMA. Might get roasted if it's a bit spicy in how you phrase it. You can figure out which pieces of content I might want to do next. I often ask people which they think between certain ideas, offer suggestions. You can even take part in one of those long discussions with me about all kinds of esports, whatever's on your mind. So if any of those sound like something that takes your fancy, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Scrumminati today via the Patreon link in the description below.